open up the champagne. Pop. It's my house. Come on. Turn it up.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Make yourself at my home. Tell me where you've been.
Hello there. And welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. Yesterday saw the return of Josh Gordon to practice. Today, John Hughes makes his return after being absent for 2 weeks for personal issues. He is back, and we will have sound from him in today's show. We'll hear from head coach Hugh Jackson today, as well as quarterback Robert Griffin III. We'll also hear from Raheem Mostert. He talked with him earlier today right here in studio. Very interesting guy, interesting interview. A guy who truly loves kick returns. I mean, he loves being a kick returner, and I found that that was interesting. Had a good 15-minute chat with him. We'll have that for you at 2:30. We'll have after further review today, and of course, it is Tuesdays with Gribbs, so Sir Andrew Gribble at around 1:30. By the way, Joe Thomas is now on Twitter. It's verified. It's for real.
Is it?
At Joe
Blue
Thomas.
Blue check mark?
At Joe Thomas 73. No check mark yet, but it is him. At Joe Thomas 73, he wants to get to 1 million followers. He's got a bet with Dan Murphy that he can get to 1 million followers by next season, by the beginning of next season.
Oh, for sure.
I think for sure. I think it's a lot. Murph thinks it's a no chance. He's like, even if he gets to 600,000, he still needs 400,000, which I was like, yeah, I'm good at math too. But like, I don't think that that's that hard for him. Now, he said the official Browns account has, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe like 400,000, 500,000. Let me hear it. I'll look it up. But basically his point was, if the Browns account can't get there, that how in the world is he going to get there?
Okay, here's one reason why. Is A, I want to see what the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Baltimore Ravens, as well as Cincinnati Bengals, their Twitter, you know, handles have follower-wise. And then I think once this gets out to the players that will make up the Pro Bowl that Joe Thomas goes to every year, with the likes of J.J. Watt, with the likes of maybe Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown and maybe Odell Beckham Jr., and Joe Thomas makes mention to these guys, all it takes is one tweet from those guys, hey, follow my boy, you know, at real Joe Thomas or whatever it is. Give him a follow. Stay, you know what I mean? And it's like, boom.
I think it's a lock.
He's going to go like 25,000 like a day after a few tweets by the right people.
Yeah. So I've got the numbers if you guys would like them for the AFC North.
Sure.
Okay. So we will start in last. Last as far as Twitter followers goes to the Cincinnati Bengals. They only have 569,000 followers. The Browns then come in at third, 679,000. Second goes to the Baltimore Ravens. They have 858,000. The Pittsburgh Steelers, the only ones over 1 million, they have 1.3 million.
1.3. I think Joe Thomas is going to have no problem. He's got a long way to go. I mean, we're looking for 991,000.
Where's he at right now?
9,000. But he's not like advertising. It's not out there. I'm trying to bring a little bit of you know, attention to it here.
And you guys got to let him know, because you guys are great on Twitter. You know, you guys tweet with people. Oh, Nathan, anyway. Matt doesn't tweet back with people.
Come on.
But Nathan,
I live vicariously through Nathan.
Yeah, so I mean, but you tweet back at people and you interact with people, and the best thing you could do is like a Q&A, a question. Somebody needs to tell Joe it's not just getting the Twitter, it's being good on Twitter, being active with
it. His tweets are actually very entertaining, so I think that he's got that going for him.
Be himself, because he's kind of, you know, that's the nice thing about Joe is, you know, we hear from him a lot, but we don't show pictures of him going hunting. Because we know he does that a lot, or fishing.
Well, he's been doing like a lot of what I would call funny kind of like locker room pictures.
Perfect.
And guys sitting around like unaware that they are on camera. He's got a good one of Jamie Meter. So what he's trying to do is really, really, you know, he's being humorous with it. I think it's interesting that he does follow. Daniel Tosh is one of his follows. Scooby Wright gets a follow, which I think is good.
Now, is the Cleveland Browns aware of this?
Oh, because yeah. He and Murph apparently, so he did an interview today, and they were really talking about it and getting into it.
Okay, because I would imagine that if the Cleveland Browns, or as an organization with 697,000 followers, were to put out a tweet about, let's welcome Joe Thomas to Twitter, that you'll get 400,000 of those people in the next month to like Joe Thomas.
Yeah. I agree. I'm gonna throw a tweet out right now for him and see if we can get anything for him just off of my sad.
What do you have? 70,000? 75?
65-ish. Yeah. So he's on Twitter. He's real and he is spectacular. So definitely give him a follow. Again, today is the final day before Thursday's preseason home opener. They'll have a walkthrough tomorrow, and then that will be it. And, of course, the Ohio Business Machine Hot Topic takeaway from camp yesterday. My big takeaway was this: how fun it was to see, even in individual drills, Josh Gordon and Terrell Pryor and Corey Coleman all running around together. And when you see Josh Gordon and Terrell Pryor walk around together or run routes together, you're like, we have never seen anything like that. And let me say this, for the people who think that Josh Gordon is fat, they're out of their minds. So he came out.
Who are those people?
Reporters.
Okay. I think it's ridiculous.
He's just a big human being, but he took off like his shirt when he was out there, and he had the sleeveless on. He's got, I mean, does he have a license for those guns? He's jacked right now.
Right.
He is jacked.
And you said Joe Hayden. Also jacked.
So, yeah, I was talking with Joe actually before the Green Bay game, and I was like, dude, is it me? I was like, or are you bigger? He's like, well, when you got your ankle busted, all that you can do is upper body. And so he's like, yeah, I'm by far the biggest and strongest I've ever been.
That's awesome.
And it's good.
And that's good because Pryor, as we've heard him say, you know, about catching the football, but also the one thing that he's dedicated to is locking on to guys and using his big body and frame to get physical with some of those DBs on run plays, on screens, and so on and so forth. And you imagine when Josh Gordon's, you know, on the other side, that if Crow or Duke, you know, on a flare screen or they bounce a run outside, to have a big body who's bought into the system as Terrell Pryor and up to this point, Josh Gordon is blocking for the Crow and Duke on those outside runs, that takes, you know, the 8-yard run to the 20-yard run. And I think they're a factor in this football game well beyond just receiving the football.
Absolutely. And it's going to be, I'm excited just to see those guys down there and the type of things we can do in the red zone. I mean, last year we were running a lot of fades to 5'8" receivers.
Yeah.
It's a big difference when you're running fades when you got two guys on the outside that are 6'5", 6'6". You've got Barnage in the middle of the field. You've got Coleman who's going to get a free release on the slot and use his speed either crossing the field or running a jerk route where you make the DB look like a jerk. All of a sudden, I mean, the world is our oyster, let alone when you motion Duke out of the backfield, get him one-on-one with a linebacker. I mean, this team is going to score points. I'm excited to see all these guys together. And I know we have to wait until game number 5, the October 9th game against the New England Patriots, but this is a team that will be scoring some points, and I'm certainly very excited to see it.
It will. And you know what was encouraging to me? And I was, you know, sitting in the kind of the friends and family tent, but watching the offense kind of run their like individual slash like route tree drills. So like every quarterback took like 3 throws to whatever wide receiver it was. And I think however the sequence went, and it might have been, you know, I don't know, Corey Coleman and then whoever was next. And then Josh Gordon was on down the line. So RG3 threw the football to whoever the first two guys were as the starter. And then they cycled through. RG3 almost paused the drill, told Josh Gordon to get back in line so that RG3 took an extra rep to throw to Josh Gordon on the back shoulder to take that one extra rep so that they can start develop their own rapport. And that's exactly the little things that we see. A, they've got the Baylor connection, but now they're here. And I think Robert being the leader and Josh Gordon being open-minded to do the work necessary to hopefully become and take the steps to become the guy that he once was.
Absolutely. And we heard from him yesterday here on the show that he was confident about his ability to return to that form. And it's something we're looking forward to. I think what I'm excited about this week is that, you know, it's one thing to talk about winning, talk about holding people accountable. It's another thing to be here. And, you know, you just feel the vibe in the building is that, sure, there were some good things on Friday against Green Bay, but flat out wasn't good enough. And that everybody here knows it. Now, it's been a physical camp and guys are a little bit dinged up, so they're taking it easy. Yesterday, I think, was a lighter day for the guys, which I think was good to see. But flat out, they know it wasn't good enough. They've got to get better. They're being coached hard, and they will. They do feel like they will get better. And, you know, I'm excited to see what they can do coming out first game at home. First game, first energy stadium for a lot of these guys, and certainly for Hugh Jackson as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. And I think it's one that they want to set a good tone, and I'm actually excited to see this one and see what they can do. But I love that they know it wasn't good enough. I mean, Mostert was in here, and you'll hear that interview in the second hour. It was just like, you know, that was the first time I'd ever caught a punt.
in a game
sure.
at any level in my whole life. And I was too far back, and it bummed me out. And I came in, and he's like, and it just wasn't good enough. But I had the resilience to come back, and he had another good punt return where he actually got a nice return plus the 15 when he got knocked out of bounds. And he's just like, you know, but that's not good enough. He's like, he led the team in rushing. But to him, what he remembers is dropping that punt, and that's the one thing that sticks to him. So I kind of like that mentality. And I asked him a question. I think that people will be interested in the answer. And again, it's coming up in the second hour. But just as a teaser, I was really struck by what Josh Gordon said, that coming back, he felt like it was a completely different locker room, a close-knit group. The camaraderie was there, and it was a new experience for him. And I asked Mostert if, you know, what's so different about it this year compared to last year, because he joined in the second half of the season. I thought his answer very interesting, very telling, and we'll get to that in hour number two. How important is that, by the way? How important is the locker room?
It's huge because, I mean, this is a place where guys have to feel comfortable. You, as coaches and as management, you want the guys to be in a comfortable setting in that locker room. That's why the investment was made by the Cleveland Browns organization to redo that locker room for these players, to give them like a player's lounge, because that is those are their quarters. And in some cases, there's places where, you know, coaches aren't allowed to be in the player's lounge. It's like their one place they can go to hide, you know, from everybody, from PR, from their coaches. But to have a buzz about the locker room in such a positive way, it goes back to something that I've said time and time again. It's when you come in here, it doesn't feel like work. I'm not going to do my job. I'm going to be with my buddies and do something that is fun. And I think Hugh has made it fun, even though it's more physical, it's more demanding mentally and physically than it's ever been before. But he has the pep in his step has created a trickle-down effect to the point where the guys want to come to work and almost live like Hugh in what Hugh does and how Hugh approaches his job and his approach to the football field. And they're just yearning for more. And they realize, we've heard it before, you know, oh, there's work to be done. Well, I think at this point right now, Hugh is the guy that has the plan, and he's going to make sure every step of the way that the work is getting done. He's got to find right now, going from 90 to 53 in the next 3 weeks, who are those guys that are willing to do the work, to grind it out. Because it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be, you know, Pro Bowl after Pro Bowl after, you know, Sunday night football and Thursday night games and Monday night football. It's not going to be pretty. So it's going to have to be ugly, and he's going to want to have the 53 guys that are willing to give up a little bit of themselves to go into that team mentality, as Josh Gordon said he has, and we've heard it from a bunch of other players, to give it up, to make it, to grind it out and have it be ugly, so that there's, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel that everyone believes Hugh Jackson can bring here.
By the way, I was just told that Joe Thomas, since we mentioned it on the show and I tweeted out, already up over 100 followers. Still a long way to go. More work to do, people. More work to do.
Awesome.
Awesome. But, you know, I think you're right. And one of the questions that, you know, I always love to ask these players, especially this time of year when the fans don't really know. Like, the fans don't know Eric Patterson yet. They don't know Raheem Mostert yet. These young guys that are scratching and clawing to make this team that they don't know. I ask them, what's something you would want the dog pound to know about you? When they see you go out, they see your number, they see your name on the back of the jersey. What's inside of that? And, you know, to a man this year, they all say they want to win, and that they will do anything they have to do it. They will always be giving 100%. And I think that's interesting. It's a little bit different than some of the things I've heard in the past. I mean, it's general, and to say it's cliche, like, but it there is something palpably different. Now, at the end of the day, vibes and want to and effort are wonderful, but this is an execution business.
Yes.
And you can have all the effort in the world, but if you're not executing, it doesn't matter.
Right.
This is an execution business. So what I think Hugh Jackson is looking for are the guys that can come through the fire, give it their all, buy in completely, and then when it matters, do their jobs.
Well, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, something that I deal with, you know, now that I'm doing the high school stuff, and I talk to, you know, some of the younger kids, even when I coach my son. The one thing that you shouldn't have to coach is effort. Running to the football, you know, when the play is broken down, whether it's a 5-yard hitch or an outside run away from you, it doesn't take a lot of talent to run to the football. Run that way as fast as you can. But yet, time and time again, coaches on the film can give guys a loaf for loafing it out there and taking a play off and not running to the football and being, you know, one step away when the guy pops out of that, you know, missed tackle or that tackle and takes it from a 5-yard gain to a 25-yard gain simply because he didn't give forth the effort. And I think that's the one thing where the mentality of expecting to win and working hard and the grind that this is really going to be for the Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson's instilling that in these guys to the point where they don't know any other way but to grind. So he's instilling that in them. But then secondly, it's going to come down to Sashi Brown and Hugh Jackson collectively putting the most talented people, you know, within that 90-man roster that they can whittle down and whittle down and whittle down and to continue. Walk them through the fire and walk them through the fire. That's what these preseason games are. That's what some of those dog days of 3 hours on the field for Hugh Jackson are. You're walking them through the fire to see when that siren, you know, goes off as the last period of practice, who can strap it up, get excited, and still bring it.
The other big story, and a guy who has brought it whenever given the opportunity, Jamie Meter ascended to the first team yesterday, working some at that big end spot in this defense, and we'll see what that means going forward. But I know that's a guy Hugh Jackson, the coaching staff, very high on, continues to make plays, and has earned the opportunity. Now, with John Hughes coming back, all of a sudden, maybe you don't have a great pass rushing front, but maybe you have an early down front that could feature Danny Shelton, Jamie Meter, and John Hughes.
I got no problem with it.
That's going to be tough to run on.
And I think just reading some of the transcripts, and I know we're going to hear from Hugh here, you know, right after this break, but they asked questions about Jamie Meter, and it just comes to the point where Hugh just says, I got to put my best three guys out there. I got to put my best guys out there. Not a specialty player on who was drafted and who wasn't and who's making what and whatever. It's, I got to put the best 53 out there. I got to put the best 11 out there. And thus far, through 2.5 weeks of camp and one preseason game, Jamie Meter has proved and earned that opportunity. Now, he can lose it.
Sure.
You know, but if he continues to thrive, there is definitely a spot for him on this starting defense in our ability to stop the run, which I thought at times was sketchy with that first group.
It was certainly in that game against the Green Bay Packers, that's for sure. When we come back, we will hear from the head coach, Hugh Jackson. We also want to hear from you, 216-578-0850. You can give us your calls. What do you want to see improve here in this game against the Falcons? What do you want to see more of? Not sure yet if we'll see Corey Coleman. I don't think we will see Josh Gordon, but we could see Coleman. We could see Seth Duvall make their debuts for the Browns this week against the Falcons. Zagern Wilhelm and my Mo Pedman, CBD, ESPN 850, WKNR. I'm a human!
Been counting all my steps, all my no's just turned to yes. Silently, I must confess my troubled history.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Dog Pound through the Cleveland Browns Foundation 50-50 raffle. Lucky fans in attendance can enter to win big at Browns home games and make a difference in the lives of Cleveland's youth. Raffle tickets can be purchased at First Energy Stadium through your smartphone, on the Browns mobile app, or at kiosk locations. Don't miss this chance to support your Cleveland Browns Foundation and kids from Northeast Ohio. Go Browns! Nathan Zagern, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Let's hear what head coach Hugh Jackson had to say after yesterday's practice.
How nice was it to see Josh doing some stuff out there?
Oh, it was great. It was great. It was good to watch him move around, catch the ball, and be involved with his teammates. As I said, he's done a great job, and we just working our plan.
Any chance he plays Thursday?
Probably not. More than likely not. I think, again, we just work in the process, and this is the next process, the next step, rather, in the process for him to get out, catch balls, and start getting involved and running around a little bit.
Do you have like a set formula where you have to practice a team
drill
for a period of days before you play in the game?
For our team?
For anybody.
Yeah, I mean, if a guy normally hadn't practiced, you know, in our two biggest days, which are Wednesday, Thursday, I mean, we'll work with a guy. It depends on what the injury is by Friday. But, you know, you need to practice to play, you know. And there's no question about that. But I think we all know there's not a lot of guys on the team once we get to that point. So sometimes, you know, every case is based on what the injury is.
Corey Coleman's status for Thursday, is he going
to
go?
We'll see. You know, today was, again, another opportunity for him to get out there finally and catch balls, run around. We'll see how he feels after today, and then we'll, you know, determine that as we move forward.
Are you encouraged just to have, you know, Josh back, Corey back?
All of them, yeah.
The receivers seem to be coming back.
It was good. You know, I think our medical staff with Joe Sheehan has done a great job, you know, getting these guys back up and running. And out there. And so, again, in order for us to become the team we need to become, I think guys need to practice. You know, that's the only way you can get better as a football team. You have to practice. And I think our guys understand that.
You've talked about Robert needs to leave the pocket and run. That'll help everything on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
But is there an understanding that not preseason?
No. There's no. Oh, no.
Just react to what
he's just, absolutely. Yeah. You know, he's I mean, you got to play the game, you know. And so if there's an opportunity for him to take off and run, I'm sure he will. But, you know, again, a lot of people are going to try to make him be a pocket passer, see if he can. You know, and then those opportunities where he's going to run, they will present themselves as they come.
How about Jamie Meter getting a little bit of first-team time today?
Mm-hmm.
Right in? Was that
Oh, yeah, I think he deserves it. I mean, Jamie played extremely well last week, you know, and he's very valuable to us. So I don't know if it was just because of that. I think, you know, again, as you guys see, we put a lot of people in a lot of different positions to give him opportunities, and he's very deserving, I will say that.
What do you like about his game?
I think he's tough. You know, he's really tough. He's strong. He knocks people back, you know, and he pursues the football the way you have to pursue the football.
Coach, Joel Batonio, what did you think of him before you got here? Were you familiar with him, and now that you've had your hands on him, what do you think of him?
I think he's one of the finest guards in football. I think he played extremely well the other night. You know, I'm very excited about his future and what he potentially could be. I mean, he did some really, really good things the other night. So I knew about him before I got here, but having an opportunity to work with him and see how hard he works and how much passion he has for playing the game and how important it is to him just raised my opinion of him twofold. So he's doing a good job.
Back to Meter is in rather than no tackle. Is that an effort to make your line bigger, keep him and Shelton?
I'm sorry.
Meter, why at right end and not at nose tackle where he's listed on the depth chart?
No, we try to get bigger because those are two big guys. No, I mean, we're going to play our best players. I mean, if a guy has a skill and he can help our football team, whether it's at nose guard or defensive end, then we're going to give him a chance. I don't think it's to get bigger. I think we're just going to put our best guys out there, and if that's the combination that works, then that's who we'll put out there.
And as a result of that, X saw some time inside the second team. Is that something that he might do a bit more of if you're going to have Jamie out there?
He could. I mean, they're going to be all over the place, to be honest with you. I don't think anybody's really locked into anything at this point. I think we're just kind of working through the different combinations, and I think that's what you guys will see on Thursday night. I mean, a lot of guys are going to play a lot of different spots and spaces so that we can determine. Again, we're still evaluating, but also trying to do everything we can to play better and get a team victory.
Coach, you're going to miss not having the fans around.
I sure will. The fans have been outstanding. I've never experienced anything like this. Every day, all the time, when they can be out here, and they truly support our football team.
Jake?
Did you ever hear the story of Batonio chasing down Devin Hester?
No, I haven't heard that one. That'd be a great story.
That
That's a pretty good story if that is true.
Did that
Oh, wow. Did he catch him? Lord have mercy. Okay. Awesome. I sure will. Thank you.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. That was head coach Hugh Jackson there talking about practice yesterday. These conversations with Hugh are getting shorter and shorter. I think he's ready to move on from the daily discussions with the Cleveland media. But yesterday, kind of a light practice. And Matt, how does it go? You go through this training camp, and we haven't heard the siren in quite some time. And now that, you know, your team's getting banged up, you've had real competition, you've had that big scrimmage, you know, the game against Green Bay. Now is it getting into more of a game week mode? Like, has the switch flipped pretty much for this football team, or will there be some more days of serious grinding, maybe the day with pads on against Tampa?
Yeah, I think there's actually going to – exactly. You're exactly right. That's going to probably end training camp, even though this Friday, essentially, I believe they officially break training camp. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that they'll have two preseason games under their belt and then the weekend to recover before they're going to have a week of – different, if that makes sense. They're going to be on the road in Tampa, staying in a hotel, getting bused to practice each and every day. They're going to have, and this practice against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they're going to be predominantly on separate fields, kind of practicing on their own. They're going to do stretching, warm-ups, individual. Then they might come together for 9-on-7. Then they'll separate to do a walkthrough. Then they'll come together and do a 7-on-7 period. Then they'll separate to do special teams. Unless Chris Tabor really wants to see more special teams reps. And then, of course, the all-in-all team reps that they'll get together at the end.
Yeah, and I think if you want to have an idea of which younger guys, guys that you think are on the bubble, are going to make this team, take a look at who plays first-team special teams against the Atlanta Falcons. I think that'll be illuminating into where some of those guys stand in these position battles. When we come back, time for Tuesdays with Sir Andrew Gribble as he makes his way into the Dog Bowl right now. We will talk with him right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, joined by Sir Andrew Gribble here in the Dog Bowl in Berea and Gribbs preseason game number one in the books. What are your key takeaways from Green Bay?
I think there's plenty to work on both sides of the ball, but I think the key takeaway, I guess, for the offense is probably that you want to keep the ball on your side of the field. And I think the big thing, I think we talked about this Sunday on Dog Pound Report too, is just that I want to see them maybe try to establish the run a little bit more. I think you got that big play right away and then the interception. So you just really could never establish much of a drive, kind of the opposite of what Green Bay did on offense. So for the defense, clearly getting off the field, making it so that you can get more than one series with your first team defense. Because I wonder if there was going to be a couple series for that defense, but they were just on the field for so long that you got what you needed to see out of them. So those are the two things. And I think just special teams, just clean it up. I think that, you know, you had the fumble from Mostert, the penalty from Schobert. I thought there were some other good things they did on special teams, but those mistakes are always going to overshadow them.
Andrew, who are maybe, I'll say, two guys that you saw play well last Friday that you want to see more of or more significant role in week two to possibly make this Cleveland Browns team?
I think the guy, most of them that stood out to me were on defense, and I think that the two ones that are going to make the team are pretty clear, and actually all three of these, I think, Nassib, Ogba, and Meter. I think those three guys stood out a lot on defense. I think that the player that is kind of emerging as someone that is being named a lot on defense is Tracy Howard, the defensive back, and really in that room right now, I think if you make some plays, you're going to have a good shot of making the roster, just because I think there's a lot of young guys battling for those last couple spots, and Howard's been a guy that's made a lot of plays since he's gotten here. So those guys stood out to me on defense. I'm wondering if this is a permanent spot now for Austin Pastore. I think he played really well, really, really sprung that run for Mostert, the 27-yarder. And then speaking of Mostert, I thought he overcame that fumble pretty well, and he looks like he's in the driver's seat now for that third running back spot.
And he is our guest later on this show. Great segue right there, Gribbs. So you named Tracy Howard. Who are some guys that you think might be on the bubble, guys that, you know, need to step up if they want to be Cleveland Browns here in 2016?
Well, I'll stick with defense first. I just think that inside linebacker room is crowded, and I think all those guys are playing well, and I think Dominique Alexander is playing well enough to the point where you're going to have to make some hard decisions there. I mean, I think you look at it, a competition maybe between him and Scooby Wright at the moment for one of those last spots in the inside linebacker room, maybe threatening positions for Tank Carter, Justin Tuggle as well. So that's one position group that is probably the strongest on the Browns roster from top to bottom, but also again, that comes with some hard decisions as well. I look at the secondary as well. You know, some players that were in some prominent roles last year due to injuries. You look at like a Charles Gaines, Pierre Desir. Those guys are fighting for their spots on the roster now, just because that's when you've got like 19 defensive backs on this roster. You're going to have to make some hard decisions. So those are some guys on defense as well. And then I'd look at the wide receiver room. I know you lost one really competitive guy in that room and Ronnell Hall, who was having as good of a camp as anyone, but it's still pretty crowded, and you're going to try to get down to six or seven, and then the looming Josh Gordon move that will happen during the season also factors in that decision. So you wonder where guys like, you look at, if you're looking for guys from last year's roster, Marlon Moore, Taylor Gabriel, and they're fighting off kind of that young insurgence from that rookie class. But at the same time, we look at last week's game, Marlon Moore, Taylor Gabriel got a bunch of playing time. The young guys didn't get as much. So will that change going forward in the preseason?
The one other thing that I'm looking for, and I know we returned to practice last week prior to the Green Bay game, is Joe Hayden. Do you expect to see Joe Hayden in this game? And I know we've probably asked this question before. Do you expect to see him at all in the preseason?
I expected to see him in the preseason, but not this game. I think he's been ruled out for this one so far. But yeah, I think it's important for him. I think it's important for him just to test out his ankle, which from all looks at practice, he looks fine. I think it's just a different thing getting into game mode. But you want to just see this secondary come together in some fashion. So it'd be ideal to see him in that third preseason game when all the starters are out there. But if you need to get him some work in that fourth game, I think that's still worthwhile too, because I think the corner is such a confidence-based position.
Yes.
And I think that Hayden has as much confidence as anyone, but I think it's one thing to have it when you're off field, but another thing to get it when you're on the field, make some plays, especially if you're in a game like that fourth preseason game, you're going against some wide receivers that probably aren't going to make the Bears, get some confidence out there and go into the season with full head of steam.
You know, you're talking about the inside linebackers in the battle, Alexander, Scooby Wright, Tank Carter, Justin Tuggle for those backup spots, Matt. Do you keep the two best ones, period, or do you need to have a Mike and a Will?
Well, I think best case scenario would be you need a guy that could become that is ultimately the third guy, which would be the first guy off the bench, and can probably play both positions. That's why also I say when you construct a roster, if you really wanted to, if there was a large disparity between that third guy and the fourth guy and maybe even the fifth guy, they just, you know, maybe one makes the practice squad, so you always kind of have that guy, you know, ready and waiting to jump up to the active roster. You can catch a roster spot by carrying three inside linebackers. But in a best case scenario, you want guys to be able to play both positions. And I think in this case, when it comes to DeMario Davis and Christian Kirksey, they kind of switch to make sure that one's always the Mike and one's the weak inside linebacker. What did you say? What do we call it? The Mac?
The Mac and the Buck.
The Mac and the Buck. One's the Mac, which is the Mike, and the Buck is obviously the weak inside linebacker. But the outside linebackers play right and left, you know, and they don't flip flop, so they learn both positions. And I think best case scenario is you want your best Mac and your best Buck to go out there and play. And then lastly, you want a guy that would be first off the bench. You know, so Dominique Alexander may not be a guy that can play the Mac position,
right?
But so he's strictly a Buck. So you need to find a guy that's your third guy that can play both positions. I think Tank Carter at times did that last year in our defense.
I'm just wondering too, are we looking at a situation where can you get away with playing both Davis and Kirksey every snap of the game? Because last year Dansby was pretty much on the field for every snap of the game, but then there was that rotation with Kirksey and Robertson. I'm just wondering, is that a position where you can play him as much as they want, or do they need some rest?
They don't necessarily. I mean, a lot of teams don't give those guys rest, and there are linebackers, you know, that make a whole lot of money to not come off the field, and everybody wants to be a third down linebacker. I strive to be a three down linebacker that never had to come off the field, both at Ohio State and in the NFL. And I think the only guy that worries me at times, that if a team wants to line up in 12 or 22 or 13 personnel and run the ball down our throat, would be Christian Kirksey. I think DeMario Davis is used to that Rex Ryan style of downhill defense and being the thumper that he is. But eventually, if a team wants to run to the open side, that's Christian Kirksey's side, and he's going to have to take on a guard play after play after play after play, and that guard's going to win a heck of a lot more battles than Christian Kirksey is, being the great athlete that he is.
Well, we talk about this inside linebacker room. Is Barkevious Mingo an inside linebacker now? What do you think for Barkevious Mingo? I mean, from a salary standpoint, it seems like it's a lock that he'll make the team, just because if you let him go, you've got to, you know, eat $5 million, but at the other side of things, this is a guy that was out there and almost seems like he doesn't fit in as an outside linebacker. He doesn't necessarily fit in as an inside linebacker in the scheme. Where does he fit?
It's interesting because it just looks like they're trying to figure that out throughout this training camp. I think they've moved him around a bunch, maybe trying to boost his confidence, trying to figure out something where they can have kind of a strategic role, and maybe he's a player that encourages you to keep a total of 9 linebackers on your roster as opposed to the 8 that we've been accustomed to the last couple of years, and then you maybe take away one from the defensive line or take away one from the defensive backfield. So maybe that is the situation that's going on. I'm interested to see where he lines up in this next game and maybe the different things they try to do with him. And I think that's what Ray Horton's indicated from the beginning, that he was reluctant to label Barkevious, but he's just saying we're going to find somewhere to put him and use him that way.
Do you think, I mean, I know that there was interest in Barkevious Mingo at the trade deadline last year. Do you think he's a guy that has some a value out there?
I think with an athlete like him, there's always some intrigue, but at some point you want to see it happen on the field. I think there's always players out there that Other teams are like, we can fit him into what we do, or things like that. Maybe that's a possibility, but I think that's what the Browns are doing right now, trying to figure out what he can do for this defense and figure out a way for him to help this team from the 53-man roster.
Jumping back to the offense, I know he's obviously got, you know, the bum hand, but in referencing Terrell Pryor, but what's the next step that you want to see in either the Falcons game or the Buccaneers game to solidify the role that we all think after training camp, the Orange and Brown scrimmage, and one preseason game that Terrell Pryor can have for the Cleveland Browns?
I just want to see him consistently keep doing this, and I think it was good that he caught both kind of a quick out route in that game along with the deep ball. I'm just curious to see how he complements a guy like Corey Coleman on the other side of the field, because the two times we've seen him make these big, huge plays, it seems like at the Orange and Brown scrimmage and then Friday, he was the top target. He was that kind of number one receiver on the field. So maybe it makes things even easier for him. Being that number two wide receiver opens things up for him. So I just want to see both of those guys out there together and kind of what the offense looks like when you can have two very different skill sets with what Coleman and Pryor have at those positions. But again, I can't – it's crazy. You can't say enough about Pryor at this point. It just looks so different for him out there. He just looks like a really good wide receiver. Like it just looks like that right now. And I just want to keep seeing him do that, stay healthy, and get more and more confidence at the position.
How good was it to see Josh Gordon back on the field? And he looks to me to be in very good shape. I mean, his arms are ginormous.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be interested to see what he looks like in pads and moving around as well going forward. But I've seen almost a difference between him when he did that press conference at the start of training camp to now. So he's clearly been putting in some work behind the scenes to get back to his normal shape. But I think it's going to take some time. And they always talk about game shape and normal shape. I think it's going to – you bring him in back for week five, I would find it hard to believe he would do the same as he did week 2014 in Atlanta, where he was the number one target in the offense and he got a ton of receptions in that game, but it fell off after that. So I think you just want to break him in slowly at that point. But it'll be interesting to see what you can get out of him in the preseason, and I would think you would play him as much as you possibly can before he goes into that month off.
Yeah, and Nathan, something you and we work together each and every day, but you know, getting to spend a couple minutes with Gribble is always good to bounce something, you know, that we've talked about off of him. But and I guess that question is, when it comes to the kickers, do we have an open kicking competition as you see it, being out at practice and after the reps and how they were divvied up in that first preseason game?
Well, it's interesting because it looks like more of one after that game than maybe beforehand. But in practice, we've seen the reps pretty much split, but you've seen Coons listed first on the depth chart. But I think, you know, when you see a guy like Patrick Murray, who has a year of they've got about the same experience in the NFL, just happens that Murray's was a year before Coons's. The fact that he's going out there for a second quarter field goal from that long a distance and he nails it, I think that adds some intrigue. And I always say, because the roster is always a numbers game and special teams always is kind of the one that loses out at the end, as long as there's two kickers on the roster, there's a competition in my mind.
Right.
Because once you can solidify that position, you usually free up that spot to supplement another spot on the roster. So as long as Patrick Murray and both Travis Coons are here, I'll consider it a competition.
I think it definitely is. And, you know, Coons started off his career making 18 straight field goals, an NFL record. Murray with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers made his final 13 field goals, and they're like, yeah, we're going to draft a kicker in the second round. You're out of here. So interesting scenario. Both of these guys clearly can get hot. And I think if Travis Coons gets to kick a 45-plus yarder in a game against Atlanta,
yes,
or in that situation, that's a big kick. And that'll tell you a lot about his ability to handle pressure, because that is probably going to be the biggest kick of his life after Murray's booted one through from 46 with ease. And we know the issues that Coons had last year. So I'll be very curious to watch that, and I think that'll go a long way. I think if he goes out there and knocks in a long field goal, and granted, you have to get the opportunity. That's what's so hard for these kickers in these games, is that, you know, we had one field goal opportunity in the last game. They gave it to Murray, obviously, but if Coons gets that opportunity, having Murray gone first and making it, I think it'll say a lot about where he's at from just a mental and a pressure standpoint, because that's a big kick for him.
I also wonder what percentage of the decision is made based on how a guy is on kickoffs, because it's clearly the field goal stuff gets all the attention, and clearly you want the guy that kicks that's the best on field goals. But kickoff has now become an even more intriguing part of the game with how you're able to position them and trying to maybe avoid touchbacks and trap them inside the 20. So, you know, I think that I want, and Coons has looked pretty good on kickoffs and had a few good ones on Friday. So I'm interested to see. I'm guessing it's not over 50% part of the decision, but it's probably a significant part of it when it comes down to deciding which one you want to keep.
It's about field position, and you could tell from Murray. Murray's used to just kicking the ball out of the end zone, and then you could also tell with Travis that, you know, his strength is about, he kicks it kind of in between the goal line and 3 yards deep in the end zone on average, which is, I think, now right where you want to kick the football as a kicker,
right?
Because these people are weighing that. You want to entice them to bring it out and then stop them before the 25.
Yeah, I just want to see, and I know that there's been a lot of stories been written just following it on Pro Football Talk about the kickoff rule and how, you know, John Harbaugh is not happy with it and so on and so forth. But it really comes down to, can you cover a kick or not? Because if he's going to kick it to the goal line to 3 yards deep, and then I think the analytics that go into after the season, it's like, okay, if the average starting position was the 23-yard line as opposed to the 25, how many more of those possessions that started at 23 failed as opposed to 2 yards further with a ball being kicked to the end zone? I think, personally, and I know it goes against the grain of me being a special teamer my whole career, is kick the ball out of the end zone because it reduces the risk of, A, the ball going out of bounds, and then B, them having a return of significance where they block us upright and gash us for, you know, out to the 50 or return it for a touchdown.
Yeah, and this is just for me anecdotally, though. It's just like, it seems like in on Friday, the Browns were able to trap the Packers a couple times inside the 20. And if you're confident in your unit,
sure,
you want to give them that chance. And also, it just seems like the likelihood of the return team committing a penalty is still pretty high out there.
Yep.
And that can really set you back. So, yeah, I think it's all about crunching the numbers and doing whatever is to your kicker's best strengths. If you got a guy like Justin Tucker, I'd probably just have him booted out of the end zone every single time. But if you have a kicker that's where it's kind of up in the air on what they're going to do, and maybe they'll kick a few out of bounds, then you're probably going to have him try to get it in between the five and the
end zone. I think even further is just, you know, who carries, you know, more clubs in their bag. I think, you know, when it comes to your ability to kick the high hopper, you know, the surprise onside, you know, the squib kick, the bloop kick, who's got more clubs in their bag when it comes to, you know, what can Chris Tabor do if you do have a good cover team? You want to be able to steal a possession, you know, in a few key games. And I think that's something that at this point in 2016, Hugh Jackson might want to consider, to be a little bit more aggressive on special teams to steal an offensive possession and maybe put some points on the board.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. And in my conversation that I have with Raheem Mostert, he talks about kind of the way that that's impacted the things from a returner standpoint, these new kickoff rules and what his rules are for when a ball comes down there. Gribbs, what do people have to look forward to catching you here on ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app?
We'll have a wrap-up of what's been going on today. There's good interviews downstairs with Joe Thomas, Cam Irvin, Corey Coleman, DeMario Davis. And then tomorrow the mailbag comes out on Wednesday, and then it's on to Thursday for nonstop Atlanta Falcons Browns coverage.
Absolutely non-stop Atlanta Falcons Browns.
And what's that
coverage.
Twitter? What's that Joe Thomas Twitter handle again?
At Joe Thomas 73. Are you following Joe Thomas?
I am. I'm one of the few thousand or whatever it's at right now.
That's right. We've got him up a couple hundred since we've come on the air today in his quest.
He's already emerged as like a top five athlete follow. Like
he's
good because it's interesting. A lot of guys, I just forget that I'm following him. He's made it worthwhile.
I think that he's doing a tremendous job out there. It'll be fun to see if he gets. I think it's a no-brainer, right? Are you, if you're going to Vegas right now, that he gets to $1 million by next season?
I don't know about that. People aren't following people on Twitter like they used to. That's why Joe has to work hard at it.
What does this mean? Okay, let's have a deep dive into society. What does that mean? What do you mean by that last statement?
I think it's hard to get a ton of followers. Harder to get a ton of followers on Twitter than it was like 4 years ago.
Why?
I think it's just. I was more undisciplined with my following of people on Twitter when I got started. Now I got to think really hard before I'm following someone.
Interesting. What are your criteria in a good follow?
It's got to be the right amount.
Yeah,
of
not too
tweeting.
Much.
If it's too much, you're gone. Like that's a quick takeaway from that. Or if it's, I don't mind people that tweet stuff I disagree with. Just make it interesting and something that I couldn't get elsewhere.
Do you follow the Darwin Awards?
I don't.
You should.
Okay. I'll look into it.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Do you follow the, what is it, like Old Takes Exposed or a Cold Take?
No, that gets retweeted enough into my timeline enough. I'm good with people just finding the ones that are good.
Actually good and making their way to you. All right. Sir Andrew, who's your favorite? If you had to recommend one person to follow to everybody listening right now, who's your favorite follow?
Matt Wilhelm. He's great on Twitter.
All right. For people that actually tweet and would show up in your timeline.
You know, I have to like look at it now. I don't know if I have like a favorite. Like I don't get super excited by a certain person tweeting or anything like that. It's just a stream of consciousness that I'm just constantly looking at my phone down, and it's just, to my wife's dismay and everything like that, it's just like a part of your life now.
It is. Yes. Is that, how is that going at home? Is that,
I'm sleeping a little bit.
Yeah.
Not, you know, sparingly.
Yes.
It comboed with training camp. It's a little bit, you know, I'm looking ahead to Tampa, get some real sleep. I'll be good to go.
Does Mary Elizabeth frown on you looking at Twitter?
No.
Good.
No, she's fine with that. I was thinking about setting up a handle just to have it locked in, but it'll probably be gone by the time she knows it.
Awesome. Sir Andrew Gribble, follow him at Andrew_Gribble on Twitter. And, of course, keep up with him, ClevelandBrowns.com, the Browns mobile app. We'll be back wrapping up our first hour here on CBD. 216-578-0850. Join the conversation right after this.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Up.
And they stay there. And they say yeah. And they stay there. Cause all I do is clean, clean, clean. And if you go in, put your hands in the air. Make them stay there.
Ludacris going in. Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Skura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl. And Matt, I was actually doing some reading here on Mr. Murray. So how about this? Murray kicked for the Bucks in 2014 and made his last 13 field goals, then doesn't make the team in 2015. I was off by 1 year on him. Doesn't make the team in 2015. It was out of the league, and now he's back here.
Was he kicking anywhere?
No.
Like Canadian Arena? Nowhere.
No.
Huh.
He was placed on injured reserve, actually.
Okay.
On September 5th, placed on injured reserve, and he was waived May 19th when the team signed when they drafted Aguayo. So it's just interesting how it works. And, you know, you wonder for a guy like Travis Coons. I mean, when I said that his next kick in a preseason game is probably the biggest pressure kick of his life, it is, because – where does he go from here, if not here?
Who, Travis?
Yeah.
Probably a similar place that Murray was last year. You know, out of the league a year, staying ready, because as we see, you know what, the Steelers have lost multiple kickers between the preseason and early season over the last couple years, correct?
Yeah.
So they have always been in the market, and that's really the role. And I think Travis Coons has a nice resume. You know, being here, not really missing any kicks, but I think the trajectory for a team or coach that wants to kick 50-plus yard field goals, or you might be in a setting to kick 50-yard field goals, that may be a little bit of a concern. And it's hard to see, without having a lot of tape of him in practice that they're going to share, of him, his ability of what he's actually worked on. Unless, you know, Chris Tabor gave a ringing endorsement via telephone on what Travis Coons has really been doing in practice.
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to a lot of things, and I really think this next kick, this pressure kick for Travis Coons, is going to be a very interesting one to see how it all shakes out. You want to see an answer, nobody miss, and then Chris.
That was last year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, with he and Spears.
Yes,
who had the nickname, I believe, Murder Leg was his nickname.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeesh.
Scary. I guess. Scary stuff. I do think that this game
killed his career.
I'm going to pay for you. Ding. There you go. A little enthusiasm. Never hurt anybody, Matt Wilhelm. I do think that this next game is going to be very interesting to see what lineup changes happen. We know Jamie Meter is ascending. Tracy Howard seems to be ascending. I'll be very curious to see if Dominique Alexander did enough to get some work with the second team. Did Agba do enough?
I think
enough?
He has.
Did just, Agba do enough to get work with the first team?
That I don't know. But just watching practice yesterday,
yeah.
And this is yesterday, which, what, there's today, tomorrow, essentially before, they'll probably lock in exactly where they want guys to play and how much is – Dominique Alexander was playing next to Tank Carter with the twos. So
okay.
That's the headway that we talked about with guys taking advantage of an opportunity. And I think for Dominique Alexander, what stood out to me was, A, he was always around the football. B, it's he played at a speed just a notch up above everybody else. Where
he did.
Dominique Alexander was just getting off a block, running to the football, all the little intangibles that you want to see in a hungry player that wants to play for the Cleveland Browns.
Let's find those guys. That's what it's all about. Who wants to be a Brown here? Hour number two, we're going to start off with some people who we know definitely want to be Cleveland Browns this season. Raheem Mostert, we're going to talk with him at the bottom of the hour. We're going to hear from John Hughes, who is back with the team today, about his time away and his ability to come back, get focused, ready to go. And we're also going to hear from the quarterback of your Cleveland Browns, Robert Griffin III. Plus, we'll hear from you, 216-578-0050. You guys are very engaging on Twitter today. Call us up. Let's chat.
Follow Joe Thomas 73.
At Joe Thomas 73. We'll talk CBD right after this.